The scripture reading for today is from Mark chapter 14, verses 53 through 60. It's Mark 14, 53 through 60. They took Jesus to the high priest, and all the chief priests, the elders, and the teachers of the law came together. Peter followed him at a distance right into the courtyard of the high priest. There he sat with the guards and warmed himself at the fire. The chief priests and the whole Sanhedrin were looking for evidence against Jesus so they could put him to death, but they did not find any. Many testified falsely against him, but their statements did not agree. Then some stood up and gave this false testimony against him. We heard him say, "I will destroy this temple made with human hands, and in 3 days will build another, not made with hands." Yet even then their testimony did not agree. Then the high priest stood up before them and asked Jesus, "Are you not going to answer? What is this testimony that these men are bringing against you?"
As we usually do, I'm going to go through the classes because they change a lot. So just show you what we have to offer. Also the fact that we kind of work on a window of opportunity with the church. So there are times when large groups of the congregation are gone, either for the summer or for holidays or whatever. So we try to schedule things in between. So we're kind of narrowing down on some of that. So there's going to be some change in the classes. The attendance has fallen off a little bit on the memory work sessions. And so we're going to move that. We're still going to be doing it, but we're going to move it into the office. So we sit around a table and do that there. And that's every Sunday morning at 9:35 to 9:45. So it's a 10-minute session, but we go through memory techniques and certain verses. The women are still going on, as far as I know. Okay, so that's today, right after services, for the young ladies. And talk to Lori or Candy about that. The Olsons, at 6 o'clock on Tuesdays, they're having that. And there was some blurb about Eric has the night shift, whatever, so you can party late at night, something like that, on this one. Singing, prayer, talks, Bible study, that's what they're involved in. The family class, also on Tuesday nights, 6:30, is shutting down for the summer because, you know, the students that are in it are all going different places, they're on travel, or have engagements coming up. So that'll wait until probably the fall to start back up again if you want to get involved in that at that time. Carol Reeves home on Thursday at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. That's still going on. I usually have to look to Patty to that, and she's not here. So they're on travel to Texas. The Saturday classes, surprisingly, are still ongoing if you want to be a part of that. The Greek class we just had yesterday in the Swamp Cooler Works, so yeah, don't be afraid to come to that class. And also the next Saturday is Studies in Islam, where we're going through the book, The Secrets of the Quran, and finding out how Islam compares to Christianity, and not well. As you know, the students will attest to. So if you're interested in any of those classes, let us know, and we can get you the materials for it and bring you up to speed fairly quickly at this time. As for our lesson this morning, hopefully you picked up one of the pamphlets outside, you know, in there. If you don't have one, raise your hand, and one of the men will get you a copy of it. And I encourage you to save it, because this is what we're going to be going through for the next 3 Sundays. So it was one thing. I had to break it down into 3, so if I broke it down into 2, it's too long. But you know, you come out ahead because it's 3, it's a little shorter, and so you may get out of here a little quicker, you know, if I don't talk too much. So as you're looking at this, we're going through to describe it, the awesome sacrifice of the Son of God. Appreciate the songs that Warren picked for this morning. They go along well with the topic. So we're going to be looking at the contents, the first two this morning, and then break it down into two the following. And we encourage you to follow with us on this because, you know, what the scriptures lay out as to the events that occurred are phenomenal in themselves. I call it the impossible rest of Jesus is because, and we bring it this, if he didn't want to go, there's not a power on earth that could have stopped him, right? Or could have made him. First, according to Jewish law, like our own, the arresting officers would have needed a charge. And so it becomes impossible in the sense of it wasn't carried out in a legal way. In fact, you might even say the arrest of Jesus and the trial was all bogus. You know, it didn't meet Jewish standards at the time. In fact, he was brought before the high priest of the Jewish Supreme Court, and then witnesses were brought forward to try and determine what the charge was. That was totally different and opposite of the way procedure should have been. Second, Jesus demonstrated that there was not much on earth that could make him go to the cross if he didn't want to go. The full account is impressive when the Gospels are read together. First of all, it might be noted that 600 Roman soldiers occupied the castle of Antonia near the Jewish temple in Jerusalem. If you see a picture of the courts of the Jews, you know, there's the temple precincts, and right next to it is this Roman tower, you know, that housed the Roman soldiers. The band of soldiers that went out to arrest Jesus were termed the spera, and in the Greek translated maniple or cohort, because of the significance of the definite article. It was the individual group that went out. The maniple is up to 60 to 120 men, a subdivision of a legion. A cohort numbers 300 to 600 as one of the 10 subdivisions of the legion. So the leader of the group, and what we're trying to impress upon you, if you ever see the movies about the arrest of Jesus, there's usually like two or three soldiers that go out to arrest him. The leader of the group was the commander of the fortress, the Kiliarch, who is an officer over centurions who are over hundreds. So doing just conservative math, given the pressure of the Sanhedrin and the crowds gathering in Jerusalem, a conservative of 120 to 200 Roman soldiers came out to take Jesus away. In addition, there was the hyperetai, which is the force of the temple police. These are the Jewish police, also large in number, under the command of the strategos, the chief officer of the temple. I'm giving you the passages where you can find all these. There was also a crowd carrying swords and clubs, which also consisted of the chief priests and elders. So you have a small army that has really gone out to arrest Jesus. In fact, at that point, when they approach and Judas indicates the individual, Jesus asks them, "Who do you seek?" And John's narrative is very specific when they say, "Well, Jesus of Nazareth," and he goes, "I am he." It says they all took a step back and fell to the ground. So even though they came out in numbers, their numbers were not enough in order to arrest him. Third, there were instances when some tried to seize Jesus and kill him, but understatedly, it just says he walked out of their midst. So when it wasn't his time, nobody could lay a hand on him. Fourth, Jesus also told Peter that he could have summoned, you know, if he wanted to, 12 legions of angels. A legion consists of anywhere from 3,000 to 6,000 units, that is, soldiers. That would put 36 to 72,000 angels at Jesus' disposal. It only took two of the angels in order to completely wipe out Sodom and Gomorrah and leave a divot in the earth that probably enlarged the Dead Sea by like 30 to 50%. The implication of all this is that if Jesus, the Son of God, did not want to go to the cross, there wasn't a power on earth that can force it. But it was not only the cross that he had to endure. It was all the problems before that. Second section we're looking at. Jesus also endures a very illegal process. Everything about this is done in secret, at night, by the wrong people, in the wrong process, in the wrong order, chronology. So if he wanted, he could have walked away from this at any time. Wouldn't even need the power of God to do it. He could just start, calling in lawyers, to defend him. But notice this, when the soldiers could finally get their hands on him, Jesus was taken to Annas, who had no authority here whatsoever. However, he had been high priest from AD 60 to AD 15, 6 through 15. Although disposed by the Roman procurator, Valerius Gratus, he still is exercising great influence through his son-in-law, Caiaphas, now serving as the high priest. In this situation, Annas is acting as the interrogator for the court, and his examination is for the purpose of extracting some information from Jesus in order to use in his court trial. This was all way out of line from what should have been done. The old man is arrogant, and Jesus is assumed to have been teaching heretical doctrine contrary to the accepted Judaic standards. When questioned, Jesus told Annas that he had taught openly in the temple and that he could ask anyone what he had said. That is, if you're looking for witnesses, and witnesses should have been brought also to be interrogated, Jesus just told him, just go out in the temple and just pull anyone out, and you can interrogate them as a witness. Okay? But Jesus' answer accepts the authority of Annas, but his return question indicates a flaw in the proceedings. Truly, this interrogation should not have been done at night in secret, and Annas should have been interviewing the witnesses as well. Annas is put on the spot and has no answer to Jesus. A soldier, sensing this, brutally strikes Jesus while his hands are tied. This officer charges Jesus with speaking wrongly to the former high priest. When Jesus asked calmly what it was he had said wrong, there's no answer that comes from either the high priest or the former high priest or the soldier. In essence, he's done nothing wrong. What he's done is question the illegal procedure of the former high priest. Having badly handled the situation, Annas sends Jesus bound to the house of the high priest, his son-in-law, Caiaphas. There before the chief priests and the whole synagogue and the whole Sanhedrin, that is the Jewish Supreme Court, they look for evidence to try to put Jesus to death. Nobody's produced anything at this point. Many false witnesses are brought to. This is part of the context that Eric read. And you notice the witnesses contradicted themselves, so they couldn't even get anything from false witnesses that were brought. The enormity of the travesty of justice is seen in that Jewish law required an indictment, and then only on the strength of that indictment, an arrest. Okay, they've already made the arrest, and they're looking for something to indict him with. Jesus had been arrested in an illegal manner, in a most high-handed way, and stood trial at an illegal hour before an illegally convened court, away from the people so that nobody could understand or see what was going on. The situation is frightful. Any number of judges should have risen up and protested against the outrageous procedures, for without witnesses, indictment, or anything else, there is a decree of death, of a death sentence. So as this is going on, of the 70 that are there, of made up of Pharisees, Sadducees, scribes, other kind of lawyers and stuff like that, these are learned men of Israel. Somebody should have had the honesty and the fortitude and courage to stand up and say, this is all wrong, because it was. But nobody said anything. When all the false witnesses failed to bring an indictment, Caiaphas stood up and demanded that Jesus answer the charges. In fulfillment of prophecy, Jesus remained silent as a lamb before his shears, not because he was intimidated, because it was all unworthy of an answer. Finally, when asked if he was the Christ, the Son of the Blessed One, that is God, he answered truthfully that he was. It was only at this point that Jesus was formally charged with blasphemy, a charge worthy of death only if it was true. Thus, Jesus was to be put to death not for anything he had said or done, but because of who he was, the Son of God. Now, this is like a true account of what occurred. This was the charge against Jesus for claiming to be the Son of God. But he just didn't claim to be. He was the Son of God. So there was really no charge to put him to death. In fact, recently, I guess, in the book, The Death of Christ by O'Reilly from Fox Network, he said the reason that he was put to death was because of his philosophy. No, he was put to death because really of who he claimed to be. And that's it. There were no other charges. In fact, as we'll get into it in the other presentations, there seems to be a contradiction when the soldier at the cross who looks up, one of them says, truly, this must be the Son of God. Another gospel says of the same soldier, truly, this must be an innocent man. It's not a contradiction, because what Jesus claimed to be was the Son of God, and that was the charge. And so when he says, truly, this was an innocent man, yeah, he was innocent. Evidently, by the things that were going on at the cross, he was the Son of God. Then the men who were guarding Jesus began to mock and beat him with their fists. They blindfolded him, demanded that he prophesy as to who hit him. And they were saying many other things against him, themselves blaspheming. So Jesus, you know, couldn't do it. He was going to be executed, but everybody around him could be blaspheming, and nobody was charged. At daybreak, the council again met and asked Jesus if he were the Christ and if he were the Son of God. All the mockery, the torture, whatever, didn't get anything from him. So they asked him again the one thing that he would admit to or talk to, and he truthfully affirmed that he was, that is, that he was the Son of God. And therefore, they came to the decision to execute him. Told you to be short. That leaves me a little more time for an invitation. That's going to be short, too. When Jesus talks to those who want to be his disciples, and hopefully everyone here, you know, wants to be a disciple, a follower of Christ, you know, meaning not only that you agree with what he said, but also you're willing to, in essence, become like him and to follow in his footsteps. You know, that's what Peter, how he puts it, that he gave us an example of how to follow. When you think of that, you know, as we're already getting into, even before you get to the cross, you have things that Jesus asks you to follow into. We'll get next time into what is implied in taking up one's cross and following him. But for this point, you know, there's things that Jesus has to undergo here. As you look at, you know, in fact, on the back page of the handout, there is quotations from Isaiah 53. And it talks about by his scourging we're healed. You know, the things he went through, not just the cross, but the humiliation, the torture, all of this is part of our cleansing. The things that he had to do to fulfill prophecy and to fully supply the necessary sacrifice for the forgiveness of our sins or the remission of them. So our life starts in this invitation, something to think about. As you look at the world, the things you're going to go face as a Christian. Pressure is starting to come down on being a Christian. It's already alluded to that what Christians teach is hate speech. We're in that list of individuals that are considered traitorous to the country by some politicians. Good thing that not all of them feel this way. But as you get into the schools, you know, you're going to find if you profess to be a Christian, your grades may suffer. Not on any, you know, lack of your effort, but just on the bias of the teacher. As you begin to stand in courts, you're going to find that they're not favorable, you know, to those of faith. Depends, again, on the judge. Some will be that way, some won't. As long as men are going by men's rules, this life is going to be unfair. You're going to find that life is only fair at the end. When God looks at the way that you've stood up to the injustice around you and decided to be a Christian no matter what, then you'll realize that there is a righteous judge, that the things that you've undergone are trials for your own benefit and for the benefit of others around you, and that your tribulations do, as we've seen in our study of the book of Genesis and the patriarchs, your tribulations help you to become better people if you face them right. This is the point of Paul's assertion in Romans, the first chapter, in verse 16, that he was not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God unto salvation to all those that believe, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. For in it is the righteousness of God from faith to faith. And that's what we see the patriarchs. They start out with a very minimum faith. They kind of believe in God, but they made horrendous mistakes. But as long as they kept at it, and we saw that their faith more and more increases, that is, they trust in God more. They have confidence, and we'll get into that this evening. But they trusted their lives to God to do what he told them to do, no matter what men did or said. And so this is the first part of our walk with Jesus, is to consider, you know, are we strong enough in order to stand up against the adversities, the mockery, the trials that men are going to bring? Okay. As we're reminded, you know, we probably haven't suffered to the point of blood or death yet. It may be coming. But this is the start of it, to see, you know, if you're going to make the decision to persevere to the end. And this is what God calls us for. No matter what may come, you know, are we going to be on his side against whatever the evils of men that can be trumped up? Jesus withstood it, silently withstood it, because really there's not much you can say against somebody who's gone mad, who's overwhelmed with their own opinions and think it is a better decision than the decisions of God. There's nothing you can say to them. You can try, but you know, Jesus saw, you know, that they had gone too far at this point. You may have to do that. But this is why God promises he'll be with us through our life, that we can access him in prayer, you know, that we can draw strength from him. We can draw strength from the scriptures and the study. We can draw strength from our community, of the church that he came to build and help supply us with teachers and people that will stand with us and encourage us every step of the way. And this is an invitation. Now is the time to make that decision, to put your trust in him, to begin a walk with him, to get your sins washed away, made possible by the sacrifice that he offered. And also, if you've already begun the walk and realize that it is sort of uphill, and a lot of times life does not seem fair, prayers of the saints are always, you know, very helpful on our behalf. So whatever your needs are, won't you come at this time as we stand to sing?